Welcome to another show. I'm Bill Carnes, my co-host Dave Champion, and we are
Totally Unprepared.
This week we're going to go through a few different things, and Dave, what's on your mind?
Well, before we get started on the subject, it occurred to me perhaps last week we did not explain to the audience that we want them to and encourage them to send us emails about what it is they would like you and I to talk about. I'm not sure we made that clear last week. So we have a segment where we talk about the things we like. We have a general news segment. But then we figure there's a lot of things that you might want Bill and I to speak to. So we want to encourage you to go ahead and send us an email. The email address appears on the screen throughout the show. So just jot it down and send us an email, and we will talk about what interests you in the fourth segment week after week.
Send it right here.
Yeah,
this is the email address right here.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good. So I think the big news this week, at least some disturbing news for me, is I'm not sure how to pronounce the gentleman's name. It's Neen or Nyeen versus North Carolina,
yes.
The case that just was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court 3 days ago. Why don't you go ahead and tell the audience about it a little bit?
Well, you have a police officer in North Carolina who stopped a vehicle that had a taillight that was out. One of the taillights was out. And asked the driver of that vehicle if he could search the vehicle. Inside the car, the driver said, fine, go ahead and search, consent to search. And there found some drugs. And from there, there was it's called a search incident to arrest. They were then charged with various drug charges. And the defendant, his attorney, ended up going through the North Carolina law and found out that there is really the equipment violation that was, as it was written in North Carolina, is a very antiquated law from back in the 50s, where it talked about you had to have at least one operating stop lamp.
Yes. It says a stop lamp.
Yes.
Singular. That's what the statute requires the vehicles to have. A single operative stop lamp.
And then in a more modern, later law, it talks about having a pair of taillights, which are just running lights. Headlights are on, they come on as well.
Right.
Which now we know that you have two running lights and three brake lights on all vehicles since the late 80s.
Right.
So we're talking about an outdated law. So let's go through kind of what happened with this, Dave.
Okay. So as it worked its way through the North Carolina courts, the courts decided that what had taken place was just fine. And it ended up getting appealed. However, his name was pronounced Neen or Nyeen, ended up appealing the case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court based on the principle that because the officer did not understand the statute, that at the time he turned his red lights on, thus legally commanding on behalf of the state this motorist to pull to the side of the road, as Justice Sotomayor referred to it, being seized, which legally is accurate, that at the time the officer seized the motorist, the officer did not understand, he was confused, that the vehicle was in compliance, in compliance with the laws of North Carolina. So they argued that because the vehicle, there was no violation of statute, that the fruits of the poisonous tree, a doctrine you and I are well familiar with, that anything that flows from the illegal act of the officer, unconstitutional violation, anything from that moment forward has to be excluded from evidence in court. Therefore, the drugs, whatever, I don't know what the nature of the drugs were, whatever the drugs were they found in the car would have to be, it's the exclusionary rule, would have to be excluded from the proceedings, and with absent the drugs, he could go home and enjoy the rest of his life. So that was how this all played out, and the U.S. Supreme Court said,
I don't really know.
The U.S. Supreme Court said, and this is the part that makes me crazy, okay?
Now, if I may lead up to it.
Sure.
The state Supreme Court said there was no violation. You cannot prosecute this guy. The exclusionary rule applies. The state appealed it to the circuit court level.
To the U.S. District Court.
U.S. District Court.
Yeah.
Which I don't know what their decision was, inevitably to the U.S. Supreme Court. But the state Supreme Court got it right, in my opinion.
I think so, too. So the U.S. Supreme Court, in something they call a 6-2-1 decision, 8 justices concurring, 2 of them writing a separate concurring opinion, and Justice Sotomayor writing the dissent, the sole lone dissent, the court decided, I can barely even say this out loud, the court decided that because the officer did not intentionally and knowingly violate the law, that he was confused about the law at the time of his misconduct, then the search that was pursuant to his lack of understanding the law, he committed an illegal seizure of the motorist. And the court said, but since his illegal seizure was an oopsie, it wasn't with bad intent, we don't have to, the exclusionary rule doesn't apply.
Really?
Now, I have a couple of points that I think are salient to this case. Number one, the Fourth Amendment does not say you can't do this except for this, that, and the other. Okay? Every exception to the Fourth Amendment has been carved out by judges, or as I like to refer to them, attorneys in dresses.
Okay. Appropriately.
And here we, and by the way, criminal attorneys, especially in the federal system, but all criminal attorneys.
Do you mean judges?
No, no. In this case, I'm talking about actually attorneys on the outside the bench.
Okay.
They will tell you there are so many exclusions, the Fourth Amendment is basically worthless.
Okay.
That to try and win a case on Fourth Amendment these days is almost absurd because there's something legitimately like 31 judicially carved out exceptions to the Fourth Amendment now.
Wow.
Yeah. And this, if that number is accurate, then this would be 32.
I'm sure the founders are rolling over in their graves over all of this.
Right. There is no oopsie exception, okay, to the Fourth Amendment. You can't search my car, well, unless it was an oopsie, and then okay.
Now, am I to gather you and I are in agreement with Justice Sonia Sotomayor?
Yeah. Can you believe it?
It's really a frigid day in hell.
Yes. I actually said to somebody yesterday, I agree with Sotomayor, and their jaw dropped. And I said, in this case, she's got it right, and the 8 have it wrong.
I'm in disbelief that we are both in agreement with her on this.
Now, I know that you're going to agree with me on this. This is, to me, the biggest blunder of this case, aside from the fact that it's just an absurd proposition that an oopsie allows you to get around the Fourth Amendment. Okay. You've been in the law enforcement community. I've been in the law enforcement community. We know how they do business.
Yes, we do. Give them an inch, they'll take a mile.
How often do you think from this day forward, whenever the opportunity, the pieces appear to lend themselves to this, the cop's going to say, to the DA, I didn't know. I see what you're saying now, but I was confused at the moment. And then what are they going to do with this case?
The only saving grace I could see, Dave, is obviously in North Carolina you had instances where motorists were being pulled over for this same violation and being cited over and over again, and nobody ever brought up that the law doesn't actually read that you have to have both of them going. Both these stop lamps going. So my point is, if this has happened a bunch of times in the past and it finally came out, the only saving grace might be is if officers from this point forward start doing things differently and in their different actions are now claiming this oopsie, if you will.
Right. My concern is that nationwide, we're talking about a single lamp in North Carolina, but this is national court-made law now. So my concern is in the 50 states and the possessions and the territories that cops now, whenever the pieces appear that they can get away with this, they're going to look at the DA and say, really?
If I had any clue, I would have flown to North Carolina and changed a guy's light bulb myself.
Yeah. You know, it's like they'll say to the assistant DA, I'm shocked. I must have been confused about the law. And then the DA will go into court and he'll bring this case up and say the search is valid. Because the officer claimed he was confused. Now, let me give you another thing. The court relied heavily, and John Roberts, writing the main opinion for the court, he relied heavily on objective reasonableness. Now, let me explain why I am so concerned about that standard being applied to this screwed-up equation. If we go back 30 years ago, if a cop shot somebody and he said, I shot him because I was in fear for my life. Part of that equation that the agency imposed was that fear objectively reasonable. Okay. What's happened to that?
Oh, it's out the window.
It's gone.
It's now, 007 status now.
Right. Now, if a cop walks up and says, I shot that 24-month-old infant toddling down the street because I was terrified, I was in fear for my life from that 24-month-old toddler with empty hands toddling down the street, the agency would say, well, he said the words.
I'm in fear for my life. Properly.
Right, I'm in fear for my life, so it's a good shooting.
Now, let's go to an even bigger problem with this case that we're talking about. The driver consented to a search. Never, ever, and I mean ever, consent to a search. The reason is you have nothing to gain.
And everything to lose.
Yeah, it's like a gunfight. If you enter into a gunfight, the best you can hope for is to leave that gunfight when it's over with exactly what you went into it.
The same amount of holes you came into it with.
Yeah. Otherwise, there's no way to win in a gunfight. There's only ways to lose or come out even at best. The same thing is with a search. Dealing with the police and talking with them, that you really, when it comes to this sort of search, is exactly the same deal. Never let the cops search your vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Always require them to get some sort of a search warrant.
And do not buy into that whole thing about what do you have to hide.
Yeah, that doesn't hold muster. They could, obviously, if they had articulable reasonable suspicion, call out for a canine officer to bring a dog and sniff and all that. That's a different story. Do not automatically
not get into that
consent
part.
To let... Yeah, that's a whole nother topic. That could be a whole show. Do not consent to these searches.
No. I'm sure you had oodles of people consent to searches. I had oodles of people consent to searches. Oftentimes they left wearing steel bracelets. And I'm going to speculate by my recollection. I'm going to guess 90% of the time that I searched a vehicle with consent, there probably was not enough probable cause to get a warrant.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely not. You had to get the consent.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for being here. We will be back right after these messages when I'm going to talk about what really sets me off. And we'll be back. Welcome back to Totally Unprepared. And now it's time for... All right, what is up with this thing that everybody's doing? It's all over the places on social media about not texting and driving. Okay, now, look, I get it. Everybody's got to have the cause du jour. Now, but here's the thing. Texting and driving. And, of course, I love that when you're all over social media and they show these, giant semi-truck that's crushed his car to the size of a beer can and it says this guy was texting. You have no idea if the guy was texting. It's nonsense. Now, here's my real beef about this. Let me tell you what researchers have shown is more of a distraction when driving than texting. Okay? You ready? Having passengers in your car, adult passengers in your car, and engaging them in conversation. Researchers have determined that that is more of a distraction than texting. I don't see anybody advocating a law stopping you from carrying passengers in your car and talking to them. Some other things that researchers have found is more distracting. Having your children in the car, quite understandable. If you have kids, you understand that one, right? I don't hear anybody calling for a law that parents can't have their children in the car, even though it's significantly more distracting than texting. Another thing researchers have found is more distracting than texting. Eating in the car. Okay? I don't see anybody pushing for a law to stop you from having your Taco Bell in the car. And lastly, one of the things that researchers have found is more distracting than texting is being on your cell phone, even on some sort of Bluetooth headset with both hands on the wheel, when you are engaged in an argument with somebody else who's not even in the car. And yet, I don't hear anybody advocating a law that you can't have an argument on the phone. But it's all about the texting. Even though there's this, and by the way, these are just the things that researchers have looked into. Lord knows how many gajillions of things are more distracting than texting. So, Bill, why the big frickin' push with texting?
Full disclosure?
Yeah, absolutely.
I am a repeat offender.
Oh, as am I.
To all of the above.
Yeah, well, I don't eat in the car, but probably, and I don't have kids, but.
Right, but, yeah. But I've done this to the kids. I can't tell you how many times.
Right.
And, you know, countless arguments with the Bluetooth device. But I have to say, I've got a clean driving record. The last time I was actually in a traffic accident, I was on duty rolling code for Las Vegas Metro back in the fall of 1995. So 19 years ago. On duty. Well, that was the last time I was involved in a collision.
Speaking of that, because that brings into law enforcement in the car, you know, law enforcement is exempt from these laws. Okay, they can text. Okay, they can work their MDT. They can text, work their MDT, and work their radar or their laser or whatever they've got in their car. Right? They can do all of this simultaneously, and it's not a violation of law. Now,
because that which is legal for the government but illegal for the citizenry is tyranny,
According to Thomas Jefferson, yes. Now, but here's the deal. You're going to love this one. True story. A cop was asked why it's okay for them to be able to text, have a phone conversation, work their MDT, and screw with their radar all at one time. You want to know what the cop's answer was?
I do want to know.
Because we build up our ability to do that.
Oh, okay. So they've done it enough that they're able to, they're better than you and I.
Well, I don't even know if it's better, but here's my thinking. Can I not build up my ability to text in the car? Can I not build up my ability to text in the car, to switch my iPod from one song to the next, to look around me, futz with my air conditioner control or my heating controls and text? If a cop can learn to do that, can you?
I can. However, I'm going to take a different angle on this.
Sure.
In the U.S., drivers take way too much time to be involved in way too many distractions. Driving is almost always the secondary function.
I would agree with that.
Which is not the way it happens in a lot of places, such as in Europe. My daughter, my oldest daughter, lived in Germany for about 2 years over a couple different time periods with her mother. Her mother's not German. Long story. She was in Germany. The thing is, it takes them a good couple of years to get a driver's license over there.
So her mother was fleeing the jurisdiction? No, anyway,
something like that. It takes a couple of years to earn your driver's license.
Uh-huh.
And if you are involved in an accident, which it is your fault, your license is gone, no matter how minor it may be. And that's at least 6 months, as I'm told. At least 6 months, and you've got to go back through and recertify. I mean, they've got the Autobahn that you're going to be on quite a bit. You're going to be driving really fast. One of the reasons I drive a German-engineered car. If I want to play Autobahn here in the States, I've got the vehicle to do it.
Right.
However, we far too often are way too distracted. So of all the distractions that you talked about in the opening, those are all things we shouldn't really be concentrating on anyhow. There's a YouTube video that went out. I saw it on a Facebook link a few months ago about this man and this woman, the camera's on the dash, and they're doing some sort of a coordinated dance as they're driving.
Right.
My comment was laden with curse words. As to you ass wipes and all of this, if you do this and I catch you, I'll pull you over, I'll beat the snot out of you. Drive your car, because if you're doing that crap and you hit my car and injure me or my kids or friends or loved ones, anybody that's with me, hell hath no fury. I will beat you bloody. Right. I will bludgeon you out of stupid and into unconscious.
Now, having said all that, and by the way, which I agree with all of that, it's a little bit different for you and I than for many people, because you and I live in a very rural community.
That we do.
I'm going to guess 98% of the time we're driving around, there's one or two or three cars anywhere in the vicinity. It's not like people who live in LA or New York or even Las Vegas for that matter. And in fact, when I go into Vegas and I may be driving to Vegas on 160 on this, you know, two-lane road each direction. And, you know, I may be driving along texting like crazy back and forth, right? But I know where the cars are around me. There's a car 500 yards ahead of me and there's a car 300 yards behind me. Who cares, right? But when I get into Vegas and I jump on the 215, I've got a little open space in the dash there for throwing stuff in. I toss my phone in there and I'm done.
Yeah.
Because now I'm in an environment where there's a ton of cars around me and anything can happen in a split second. So that's when I put it away. And I got to tell you, now I come from Los Angeles. No shortage of crazy, insane speeding drivers in Los Angeles. But I've lived out here for quite some time, so I think I've sort of de-acclimated, if that's a word. So then I go into Vegas, and I jump on the 215 freeway, and I'm doing the speed limit. And apparently I am a schmo.
You're not going fast enough.
Not even remotely. I get on the freeway, the speed limit's 70. I might be doing, say, 75. I'm doing 5 over. And whoo, whoo, whoo. They're getting by me like I am standing still. Now, I laugh because I am kind of laughing at myself that my mentality has changed since living in a more rural environment. However, honestly, at the speeds these guys are going, and I would have said this even when I was living in Los Angeles, where are they going if they need to put everybody else on the freeway at that kind of risk?
You know, I grew up in Las Vegas. That's where I learned to drive. And I got to tell you, I actually appreciate the drivers in Los Angeles far more than Las Vegas, because if you're all the way in the left lane on the 5 going through downtown LA and you got 6 lanes of traffic before you hit the exit, mm-hmm. and you turn on your signal light, people are going to let you over because they realize, you know, look, this happens to all of us.
Yeah.
In Vegas, if you do that, they'll speed up
close
to make
gap.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I understand why a lot of people in Las Vegas decide not to use their turn signal, because oftentimes if they do, somebody's just going to be an a-hole about it.
Right, right. And, you know, honestly, my thing on the turn signal is if I imagine that someone's going to do that, I don't give them the heads up. If it's safe to move into their lane and I imagine they're going to be a sphincter about it, I don't turn the blinker on.
It's amazing how well you can predict these things after just a short period of driving.
Yeah.
You know what everybody around you is about to do. You know if this guy coming up on your right is going to move in and cut you off and keep going. And so you know it. You know it when he's 3 car lengths behind you in the other lanes.
Interesting story about closing up the gap, which I think irritates every driver. I can't imagine there's any driver that flips on their blinker and the guy zooms up and closes the gap that isn't annoyed by
it.
They're
like, oh, right? Yeah, hey, cool.
Yeah, yeah, thanks for that, buddy.
Yeah.
But this goes back decades ago. There was a gentleman I had a friendship with. This is in Southern California. I was probably my late 20s, perhaps.
Wow.
And
this is back when the cars were available in one color, black.
Horse and buggy, dude.
Horse and buggy, yeah.
And
Model T.
I'm at a party, and this guy that I had this friendship with, and things had been getting rocky. You've been there, you know, you have a friendship, and you're like, what's going on? This just isn't really working.
Right.
You know, and it had been getting weird. I don't think he knew it was weird, but from my perspective, it was getting weird. And I was like, what's going on with this guy? You know? And I normally give those things some time because, you know, people go through things and, you know, nobody's perfect, right?
Sure, maybe it was a job thing or a relationship thing. Who knows what?
Yeah, family thing. So, you know, give it some time, kind of monitor it. But it wasn't getting any better. And there's a few drinks that have been happening at some party. And he rips off with this story where he says, in a very braggadocio kind of way, as if, you know, look at me. He says, yeah, I was driving down the freeway the other day, and there was a space in front of me, and this guy put his blinker on. He says, oh, no, and I sped up and closed that gap off. I'm not letting him over. That was the last time I have ever laid eyes on him. I'm like, I'm done.
Good for you.
That was the final thing. I mean, obviously, that in and of itself would not have been enough. But it was the final thing with all the other stuff. You know, if that's what makes you feel manly,
done. What kind of an asswipe provides bravado that I'm going to be the most inconsiderate driver I can be to everybody else? I'm all about me.
Yeah.
Which is kind of giving away what the next segment that I'm going to get into is about. So let's not go too far down the path. Let's get back to texting and driving.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been about 2 years or so here in the state of Nevada, where we're located, that texting became illegal, thanks mm-hmm. to some Democrat that decided to put it through because she got distracted while texting and driving. Since she got distracted, obviously, she's better than everybody else, and if it happens to her, it's going to happen to the best of us.
Yeah.
Because she's the best of us, right? So it's been illegal since then. So what do we do now? We text, you know, just kind of down low.
Oh. And the thing that kills me is today cops will pull you over. And were you on your cell phone? Did you have your cell phone in your hand? Yeah. All right, I'm going to write you. But no. That's not what the statute says. The statute says texting. I can look at my GPS map. I can look at my calendar. I can check my updates
it says,
on Facebook.
It
you
says,
just can't text.
Submitting or receiving digital communication. Or
so if I'm looking at my calendar to see what I have left to do in that day, I'm driving down the road looking at my calendar, or at night, and he sees the glow, he's going to want to write me. But just like the
find
cop
a judge that'll help your argument.
Right, just like the cop we talked about in the first segment.
Yeah.
That ain't right. And we will be back right after these words.
And welcome back. Now it's time for... You know what really grinds my gears? People who are just plain rude and inconsiderate. Now, they might be stupid as well, but let's try to fix at least the rude and inconsiderate part. And I'm talking about out there in public. I gotta tell you, because of these experiences, I hate being forced to go during regular business hours to my local super center, particularly the Walmart. Not a big fan of going there. The reason is you have people that have no idea about shopping cart etiquette, how to move around in a parking lot, just their body, their position, taking up too much space. It drives me bonkers. And Dave, I'll submit to you that if we use the same rules of the road as we do we use the same rules to a shopping cart, things would be fine. But I got to tell you, when I am walking down an aisle, and in that aisle, I end up having to move around somebody's shop because here's their shopping. Here's the aisle, right? Aisle here. Shopping cart here. They're here. I can't get along. You know what I do? I'll literally just stand there. Right. I won't say a thing. I'll stand there and wait. And then they're, oh, I'm sorry. Well, I get that. But you're also rude and inconsiderate. Get the cart out of the way. Get your ass out of the way when you're walking through the parking lot. If this is the way that the aisle for the parking lot goes and you need to cross, don't go at an obtuse angle so anybody driving can't get around you. Or walk down the middle so nobody can go anywhere. Walk near the bumper of the cars, walk straight across at a 90-degree angle, and get the living hell out of the way and be a little bit more considerate of others.
All right, first of all, you don't have to submit to me, Bill. But anyway, oh, I'm with you. And, you know, all of those things you talked about, we all experience, and talk about irksome. Because it is nothing more than inconsideration. They're in their own head, and nobody else on the planet matters. And the one that you talked about, super pet peeve of all the things you detailed, the aisle in the grocery store or the department store, well, grocery store, because that's where you have the cart, okay, where they, it's made to be only so wide and for people to pass, okay. And people will just stop their cart in the middle and then turn and start looking at the shelf. Well, between where the cart is and where their body is, they have just impeded everybody else in the aisle from going back and forth.
And sometimes even if you don't have a cart, you're just walking. They take up enough room that you can't get
right.
by.
Now, tell me this. And this is the part that I think really does it for me is why that's my pet peeve. I don't care whether you're 20 or 80, you know what you're doing because you had it done to you. So for somebody to stand there, like the example you gave, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, no. You knew what you were doing when you did it. Because anybody who's responsible, anybody who wants to be considerate to others, does the following. They pull up and they've got their little cart and they look over and that's what they want and they move the cart to one side or the other and then they go over and they select their item, they put it in their cart and they move on. They get the cart and they get their body out of the way so other people can make use of the aisle. Anybody who's been in a grocery store shopping has had it happen to them. They know how inconsiderate it is, so I do not believe, whether they're 20 or 80, that they don't know exactly what they're doing when they do it. They're just inconsiderate asses.
And imagine this. You've got someone who's properly taken their shopping cart and put it against the side. They walk in front, maybe go down a little ways. They're looking for something. Someone else comes up, and they put their shopping cart right behind the other person who's stationary. Now nobody can get through because the second shopping cart person has now blocked the way, being inconsiderate there. Use your freaking skull, folks. And I have to say, my longtime girlfriend and I, when we go shopping, I operate the cart. The reason is, she will do these things that drive us nuts. She'll just stop the cart and walk away. She'll leave her purse in it. She'll walk half an aisle away. Cart's right there in the middle. So on the rare occasion happens.
Now I regret all those things I just said.
No. She knows she does this.
Okay.
And she, I'm sorry. You're not sorry. You're just not doing it right. It's simple. You know, that's why I don't let you drive much. It's because you don't operate the shopping cart well. Either.
Right.
I mean, come on. So, and here's one that I love. I've experienced this. Tell me if you've experienced this as well. Turning the corner, going down a fresh aisle. Someone is down there. They're by themselves. They look over their shoulder. They hear the noise of your cart. They're blocking now. They see you. They do nothing. They continue to look.
Right.
You get there and stop. They look over again, and then they're surprised. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. When you looked over and we made eye contact the first time, did it fail to register that I was coming down here and maybe you should get your ass and your crap out of the way so that the rest of us in this aisle might be able to move around and do what we need to do? Just be considerate. You know, I am so sick of this look out for number one. There's a time and a place for that. There's also a time and a place to be courteous.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, it's most of the time is to be courteous. That lookout for number one is the exception, not the freaking rule.
Okay. You want me to amplify this for you?
Bring it on.
I know I'm going to make some people angry, but it is my personal experience. The people who use the little motorized seats,
mm-hmm.
they make everybody else look completely considerate. They just cruise around. I am generalizing, but I'm going to say 95% of the people that use those little carts where they sit down and motorize around, they're hell on wheels and they don't care. They come around corners. They fly around. If you have to stop suddenly, they just go by and look at you. I've only had one person with one of those carts like cut me off and look at me and say, oh, I'm sorry, and then move out of the way. But they somehow feel that once their rear end is connected to that seat and they have their hand on what is it in video games?
The joystick?
The joystick. Once they've got their hand on the joystick, they have the right of way. They are God, and every single pedestrian in that store has to make way for them or screw you. Where does that mentality come from?
I'll tell you, it's interesting. If somebody comes into a store and they're on their own private little scooter, their little, I don't know what they call it, the little kick-and-go scooter, whatever they're on.
I call it a motorized chair.
The motorized chair.
Yeah.
Those who are on their own privately owned motorized chair because they need it all the time are generally a little bit better about it than those who walk into the store, sit their ass down on the store-owned, the Walmart or Home Depot or mm-hmm. Albertsons or Safeway-owned scooter, and then they go around. And I have to say,
and I've watched some of them walk in completely normally.
Yes.
It's like they're too lazy to shop.
Right. And the thing is, oftentimes the people who do that are the ones who are morbidly obese.
Yeah.
And if anybody should be doing 3/4 of a mile through the aisles of Walmart, it's you, because you could afford to burn a few extra calories, not sit there and take advantage of maybe having a couple of Twinkies along the way and paying with the empty packages.
Okay.
Have some self-respect. Have some respect for others. I have to, you know, Dave,
they're only obese because of their thyroid.
Oh, yeah. My primary care physician is actually a nutritional doctor. Went to medical school and does all of the nutrition-related stuff. She's fantastic. In Las Vegas, board certified in the state of Washington. We don't actually have a board certification in Nevada. She's working on that. Anyhow, I actually talked with her about this thyroid thing, and she goes, yeah, that's one of the world's best excuses for getting fat and staying there. It's a great excuse.
I actually saw medical research that of all, if you take all the people who are medically considered obese, only 1% of them actually has a medical condition that creates the obesity.
Yeah, and you know, I had an encounter at the local Little Caesars. I think it was Little Caesars months ago, maybe a year or more ago. This lady was in her little scooter. She comes up there, and she's got like the super tanker of cola sitting in the makeshift drink holder. You know, it's literally like probably a 96-ounce super tanker, refillable.
Probably full tilt, not sugar-free.
The refillable, right. And she's got an ashtray that's pretty full. Not overflowing, but pretty full. And the cigarettes. And she goes, and she's ordering like one of these double pizza combos and another 2-liter bottle of sugared soda and paying for it with an EBT card. Okay, now I have to say, to each their own, but this particular individual is literally spilling off of both sides of this scooter. And I have to ask, at what point in time do you get up in the morning, you look in the mirror, and you realize there's an issue here? And I can either do it with diet and exercise, or I can do it with diet, or I can do it with exercise. If I do it with diet and exercise, I have to do a reasonable amount of both. Just diet, I got to go pretty hardcore. Just exercise and keep eating the way I do, pretty hardcore.
Yep.
You know this. So diet and exercise. At what point in time, or do you just give up and say, you know what, I want to break a record. I want to break a record. You know, there was a guy in England who topped out at 996 pounds, 4 pounds shy, one meal for him, shy of a half ton of weight. He ended up dying after he had that gastric bypass surgery. Yeah, he ended up dying months later, pneumonia, whatever. He'd hurt his body so bad. And I just have to ask, I mean, we're getting away from the shopping cart thing, but I guess it all comes together. You know, at what point in time are you going to be more considerate about others other than yourself? Why be so damned selfish that you're going to be such an obstruction to the rest of society?
Did I ever tell you my idea on forced weight loss?
No.
No, in the land of liberty, this doesn't fly, but here's what you do. You snatch the obese person up. You take them to a compound, many, 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 many acres in some place like Idaho or Wyoming, and you have cabins, and you have to walk from the cabin to the mess hall. Okay. And so week one, you're in this cabin. It's a short walk. After like 10 days, you go to a cabin, your stuff gets moved to a cabin further away. At the 2-week point, a little further away. At the 3-week point, further away yet. So eventually, what you're doing is every time it's time for a meal, you're taking a 4-mile walk or a 5-mile walk.
There and back.
There and back. And I thought, you know, if overweight people needed to walk to eat, they're going to eat, yes?
Yeah.
So create an incentive. Use the fact that they're going to eat as an incentive. But, of course, you can't. My thing was like, you know, like an intervention. Snatch them up, put them in a van, and like a prison van, and drive them up there. And, you know, the thing is, and I'm not making that we should do this for real, but this is just funny. But, you know, they're killing themselves. So
they are.
Get them healthy.
But, you know, back to the whole thing with the shopping cart that started off this section, it has to do all around with when you go shopping at a place where a lot of people go. So I'll leave it at that. We'll be back right after these words for our fourth and final segment, right after these words.
All right, we are back. This is the fourth segment where we talk about things that you, our viewers, would like to talk about. I received an email from a lady, Angeline, and she wanted to know about firearms training. And unfortunately, the email was a little vague, so Angeline, we're going to feel this as best we can. She lives out in the Grand Rapids area, and apparently, I take it, if I read between the lines of her message, she has some basic level of training to some extent, and wanted to know if it was going to be a great idea for her to take some more advanced training, and whether that was going to be a good idea, whether it would compromise some of the training she already has under her belt. Now, the reason that we're fielding this is Bill and I have a ton, collectively, a ton of experience in firearms and tactics training.
We know a thing or two about a thing.
Yeah, a thing or two. So, unfortunately, I wish Angeline had provided more detail because we could answer it better. Let's start with, she said, if I read between the lines, she's got some basic training. So, Bill, why don't you take a moment and speak to what I know you and I would like to see every single American get under their belt, those basics.
Yeah, just to give an idea, the industry standard of firearms training is unfortunately really low, far too low. And I'll give it to you in terms of football. There is a professional level of football, the NFL. That's the right training to get. The industry standard, however, is generally about that of what I would refer to as, and tell me what you think, about a junior varsity high school level, not realizing that there's varsity, junior college, college, a few levels of that, indoor football, Canadian football, and then the NFL. Not even really realizing that those exist.
I think you're being generous.
I might be. But really, the industry standard is what's given to the average cop or what military learns. Even second-tier military is kind of rough. You have to get quite a bit higher up there. Third, fourth, fifth sort of tiers. We're talking tier level of your MOS, you know, what your job set is.
I think the average citizen, though, if they can go out and take a revolver or a semi-automatic handgun or a shotgun and blow up the old microwave oven that they threw 40 feet away, that's their training.
Yeah, and that stinks. I actually had a cause for a guy that I knew. He worked with somebody that I knew, and he'd like to go out with a friend of his, and they used to like shooting at empty soda cans out in the desert. And I encouraged him to come and get some proper training. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm pretty good. And I said, well, the thing is that soda can is not sneaking up on you, surprising you, and trying to kill you. It's just sitting out there, and you're plinking is the term. So the idea is you need to train with a gun by someone who understands how to get you up to speed on how to do this. Like your life depends on it. That's, I don't go out to competition shooting. I don't do the IPSC or IDPA or any of the others. IWORK. I don't know what it is. I don't go out and do competition shooting. I shoot and I train people to shoot based on defensive skills to save your life or that of a loved one.
Does it kill you when you see like on YouTube people put up these videos of these competitive shooting events? And I know it kills me. And they put it up as evidence of what's awesome and what's great. And here's how you need to learn how to shoot. And I watch what these guys do for the benefit of prevailing in the competition when no one is shooting back. To say I cringe is a gross understatement.
Yeah, that's even a whole new topic right there. There's some sight and some trigger work, which you can take out of that. Everything else, running from point A to point B. If you're running into a gunfight, you're doing it wrong. You're going to get shot. You might die. It's very likely. You will get shot. You may die. When it comes to Angeline's question, I think what I would say is if you can get faster out of the holster and your shots on target quicker, your first shot on target quicker, and your follow-up shots on target quicker by the training that you're doing, along with incorporating some movement, either post, during, or pre, during, or post the actual pressing of the trigger, and you're able to increase your skills by doing that, it's good training. If you're not at the level that Dave and I are, the amount of time that you and I have been in this industry, the number of things we've seen. I mean, I've taught well over 10,000 students in my career. You've probably done at least the same. When it comes down to it, you get to a point when you're at levels like what we are, you go to training and oftentimes you take away how not to do something.
Absolutely. And for Angeline, I would say this, because she's a female. Female often do off-body carry, purses, fanny packs, day minders. So, Angeline, if you're looking at going to that next level of training, whatever it might be for you, you probably want to take the basic skills, sight alignment, sight picture, and trigger control, which if you're talking about taking some other level of training, those three components should already be well in place. You might consider training with somebody who is going to, if you're going to carry off body, for instance, in a purse and so forth, work with somebody who's going to work with you as you carry. You and I know a school, we've both been affiliated with it, who does not do that.
Oh, no.
They have one way,
And that's it.
And that's it. And if a student comes to them and says, well, I don't carry that way because I can't in my life, in my world, I only carry this way, and it's anything outside the very, very narrow thing they call the norm, they can't help you.
Yeah, and I have to say that that very same institution that you're referring to, I proposed no less than 6 different courses or variations of curricula to account for what actually is happening on the street. Every single one of them shot down.
Oh,
just almost immediately.
I had that experience
and,
as well.
One of them was to have a course, an advanced handgun course, that came around once a year. This particular course came around 4 times a year, so I want to do it different each quarter and have those recurring once a year. And one of them was going to be off-body carry or carry the way you normally do. What that school wanted to do was they wanted to teach you, look, carry the way we teach, don't carry any other way. Talk about limiting your options. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and if you teach somebody that and they accept it while they're there, okay, while I'm here, I'm going to play by your rules, and then they leave and go home, and what they were taught is impossible for them to employ. How, I mean, other than satellite and sight picture and trigger control, how have you helped them?
Yeah. I would,
By the way.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and say this name out loud because I think we're congratulating him. Kyle Hinkle.
Yes.
He achieved handgun combat master a few days ago.
Did he?
He did.
Congratulations, Kyle. I remember Kyle from many years ago.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Good man.
Yeah, he actually took that course years back when I was teaching it.
I think he's number 60.
Okay, so did he take it under Chuck Taylor?
No.
Okay.
No, he took it under the 60 number compounds both schools.
Okay, all right. All right, then yeah, there well, could be at least 60. 60.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Excellent. Good
you
job.
You wanted to talk about YouTube, first of all. If you want to watch this show, current, anything in the past, of course, we'll be building up more shows as we go along. All you have to go do is go to YouTube and search for Totally Unprepared Bill and Dave. Now, unfortunately, the way YouTube search engine works, because we're a newer show, for now, that's the search criteria you have to use. Totally Unprepared Bill, Dave, and then you will get our channel, our YouTube channel, and you'll be able to watch any of the shows we've done.
And you can subscribe to it, and then when we upload new shows, you'll get an email.
Yeah,
if you check it out.
Yeah, please do subscribe. That would help us out because we can do this whole search thing easier with YouTube. You can do it easier. We can help you do it easier if we get 500 subscribers. So if you go to the channel, once you find it, then subscribe. That would help us help you. You wanted to talk about something also.
I did, and it has to do with this whole training. In this past week, we've had a couple of mass shootings in the news, not here in the States, interestingly enough. Mm-hmm. One was in Pakistan, one was in Australia. We oftentimes hear about the way they happen in the United States. And of course, in Australia, many years ago, about a decade or so ago, maybe more, they had tremendous gun control actions go in there because they had a mass shooting in Tasmania, one mm-hmm. of their provinces.
I remember.
And another on the main continent. So everybody had to give up their guns for the most part. There were some exceptions.
Damn few.
And the question is, how do we stop these mass shootings?
Well, you know, it's funny. The one in Australia, of course, by my standards, they did the same thing. The nutballs there did the same thing the nutballs here do.
Yes.
They go to places that are gun-free zones.
Yes. And this guy had a gun permit.
Is Australia.
not only did the perpetrator of this horrible crime at this cafeteria in Sydney have a permit to carry a gun, he was out on bail, as I understand it, for some pretty serious crimes, some violent-related crimes, and still had the gun. So their system is screwy. But I have to tell you, there is one surefire way to stop these shootings.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment that they start, when you're carrying a gun, pull your gun out and shoot them and stop them. Bullets stop these mass shootings.
Yeah.
The reason that they are perpetuated is because so many people are disarmed that you can't stop them. Remember the college student Santa Barbara a year or so ago, driving all over town, shooting at people?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Nobody was able to stop this guy until he happened to go by where some cops were and they returned fire. That's when it started, the stopping began,
right.
The process to stop and began. And actually, you and I know somebody who used to live in Santa Barbara. We're talking about a lady, business owner, law degree, not a practicing attorney, however, and worth at least 7 figures, pillar of the community, family there, and applied for a concealed weapons permit with the police chief of Santa Barbara, denied, then took it to the sheriff of Santa Barbara County, which is the next step in their lawful process at the time, and denied. Imagine if she were there and this guy's running around.
And she's dialed in. She knows how to
shoot. Oh, yeah. And she trains at the combat master level, the highest level there is. Her brother is a combat master number 43, Richard Petty's number.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you knew that.
I did.
Okay.
Miraculously.
Yeah, miraculously. Yeah. Dave and I go back and forth on this NASCAR thing.
Left car.
But the thing
turn,
is,
turn,
is when there's two road races, stop it. And there's also going back to the garage. Sometimes you got to turn right. When it comes to mass shootings or people just doing evil with guns, there's one way to stop them, and that's with bullets into their chest. Unless they're wearing, of course, body armor. Take one to the head.
As I'm knocking on the solid steel here on my side.
Yeah, and there's a couple of people to never make the false assumption around where the town where you and I live that they might be unarmed, and that's you and I. Never make that assumption. But do not take for granted that you will not be a victim when you go to your local Taco Bell or your stab and grab or
anywhere,
shoot and scoot.
Anytime.
Yeah, could happen anytime. Be prepared, not paranoid.
My friends, thank you so much for joining Bill and I for Totally Unprepared. We loved having you. Please do send us an email, and we will talk to you again next week. Take care. We'll see you next week.